legal term.
I object.
Overruled.
Oh, okay. Well, this is not going to be a very...
You have to object.
Oh.
Objection, Your Honor. Circumstantial. That's something, right?
That's a good one, yeah.
Objection. Hearsay.
Objection. Leading the witness.
I like badgering the witness.
Oh, like an angry badger?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Habeas corpus. That's fun to say.
That's a good, like, there's some good Latin law words.
I like tortfeasor.
What's a what?
A tortfeasor.
What's that?
I think it's just like the bad guy.
Oh.
Because I don't quite understand what tort means.
Torts is, I know, like a class that you take in law school, but I don't actually know what it is.
Yeah, so you're just saying it's a legal term.
Yeah.
Yeah, so someone who commits a tort is a tortfeasor.
Hmm.
Objection.
Overruled.
Sustained. Well, welcome everyone to another episode of I Love This, You Should Too. My name is Indy Habeas Corpus Randhawa, and with me is my lovely co-host, Samantha, Objection, Your Honor, Randhawa.
Oh, we sound so stern.
We're pretty stern.
No.
I think that's something people say about me.
Uh-uh.
What a stern guy he is.
No, you're not stern at all.
Watch. Look at this. I was making a face. It's so stern.
No, you just looked really cute, so not
all right.
Stern at all.
You never saw me teach high school. That's pretty stern, then.
Mm.
But now I teach babies, so I don't have to be stern. Well, let's get into it. Why not?
Okay.
Because this is our last episode of Legal Month, and we're talking all about the 1962 classic film, To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yes.
Last week, we talked a bunch about the novel, but it was my pick for a movie, and I went with this one. Neither of us had seen it in quite some time.
Yeah.
So upon a rewatch, we both really liked the novel.
Yeah.
How's it hold up?
I really enjoyed it. I thought it is a very like important piece of film. I think they did a really good job with it. And I think it held up for me. What about you?
I don't think it's a bad movie. So I'm going to say that right off. I was disappointed.
Oh.
It's not as good as I remember. And I think that is colored a lot by my love of the novel.
Mm.
I think the novel is amazing. And I think the movie's pretty good.
Okay.
Whenever we talk about an adaptation on this, we try not to bring up the book very much because the movie should be able to stand on its own. But I feel like I'm going to bring up the book a lot because every criticism I have of the movie, I could just go like, see, here's how it could be better as it was in the book.
Right.
And of course, they can't do everything in the book because it would just be so, so long. But where their concentration was focused, and especially a few key scenes that they cut out of this and characters, that's what I think this movie is lacking.
Oh, yeah, because you did say while we were watching it that there's like, where's this scene? How do we know this person?
There was a bunch of times where they would make reference to something, but we didn't see that thing.
Huh.
So it's like they were just assuming that you would know the book well enough to go like, hey, remember that scene? We're not going to show it to you, but we're referring to it here.
Oh, see, that's really interesting because, yeah, I feel like most people who see movies aren't reading the book beforehand.
Yeah, but this was like a year and a half after the book came out.
Oh, so it was a pretty big book too.
Yeah.
So
it was a Pulitzer Prize winning book. The movie comes out not too long after. So they kind of are in the zeitgeist for an equal amount of time. There's not a big difference between how long the book's been around than the movie.
Okay, so maybe people had read the book and then seen the movie.
But you can't expect that from a movie-going audience.
No, absolutely not.
And I did say some things about the book in the last episode. And if you want to hear us talk about the book and a little bit about Ghost at a Watchman, you can listen to that.
Oh, yeah.
But some of the things I said, well, the book does this and this that nothing else does. So I'm so happy about that, about the movie. I take it back because the movie doesn't do all the things I thought it was going to that I claimed the book did. And I still feel like the book does do those things.
Okay. Interesting. What things didn't you like?
Well, let's get right into it, I guess. So I was saying how so many movies of this subject matter get into your whole like white man ends racism,
right,
white savior stuff. And it's like, that's not that book at all, because the character is developed and we go along that journey. And in this one, I don't know if it's quite to that extent, but it's not good. Because in this movie, I feel like the black characters are used as props for Atticus's character to look good.
Right.
And the character of Atticus and the performance by Gregory Peck, I think, are still great.
Oh, I thought he was fantastic, yeah.
In the book, you go to the side of town where all the black people live. You go to the church. The church scene is a very important part of the book because Jem and Scout go to church with Calpurnia.
Mm-hmm.
That's where they meet Reverend Sykes, who in this one they go, "Hey, Reverend Sykes, how's it going? How do you know that guy?"
Yeah.
Why would you know the black reverend
at a church that you've never gone to?
Yeah.
That we know of. But
and
yeah.
He invites them to sit with him upstairs in the courtroom. And that's big, not just like now we know why they are up there, but they have insight into that world.
Mm-hmm.
They see how it's different. They see how they don't have hymn books. That is all of Scout's maturation throughout the novel.
Right.
And here we don't have that. Here we hardly get any words spoken by black characters.
True.
We get Tom Robinson, who is being accused of rape and assault, and Calpurnia a little bit, but not nearly as much.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised because I remember Calpurnia being like a huge part of the book.
She's a mother figure.
Yeah, and I was really surprised how little Calpurnia there is in the movie. Because, yeah, I remember her being like their mom and taking care of them and teaching them lessons and that kind of thing. And yeah, I feel like the movie misses out on that because it was kind of a sweet like moment, and you can see how the children interact with like the other people in the town through her, which is really interesting.
And because of all that, because we don't know all of these black characters, they are just black faces.
Mm-hmm.
So they come off as props a lot of the time. Like the most powerful scene or one of them is at the close to the end when they say like, "Oh, stand up, your father's passing,"
mm-hmm.
in the courtroom scene, when it is just nameless black people paying tribute to this white man. It's very different than
mm-hmm.
these characters who we've learned about and we have learned why they respect this man. It reads very differently. And I guess if you're not thinking about it as much, you still get those feel-good emotions of like, look, they all respect him because he's doing good work. And that is true, but it's much more hollow when we don't know who those people are.
True, yeah, because we do kind of get to know them through Scout and Jem. And they did feel a little bit like props. And that is too bad about a movie that has such an important message of putting aside race and just looking at the facts of the case. And I feel like we put aside race too much.
I've heard the criticism of the novel that this is like some sort of idealized version of the South. And I always found that strange. But again, I think people are talking about the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the movie, it does feel like that at times. It doesn't feel as real because it's not as fleshed out, and a lot of the things are much more surface, and the movie deals with essentially one thing. It is about racism towards black people.
Yeah.
While the book had so much about class structures, it had such a strong feminist message as well,
mm-hmm.
which here you get Scout is a tomboy. That's it.
Yeah.
And that's her character. And I do think the kids are fine. I liked Scout. I liked seeing her on screen.
They were funny.
Yeah.
The kids were very funny.
But without the aunt character and her always being told that, like, oh, you can't dress like that. That's not what ladies do. Here's what you should be doing. All of that's cut out. And we don't see that struggle within her because it's not to the same extent, of course, but that is a bit of a mirroring that she feels outcasted from society in a way. And then she's learning about all of these other outcasts.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Cunningham boy who in the movie, she just says, "You made me get off on the bad foot,"
mm-hmm.
or whatever it is, and beats him up. We don't know what happens.
Yeah.
Because all of the inside the classroom scenes, which really deal with the classism of this society, that's all cut. So we don't have that either.
Yeah, that was one thing that I remembered, probably just from the book, which I read, I think, in junior high or high school, and haven't read since. But I remember learning about the structure of this small town and like the class system, like you are saying. And I did feel like you got a really good idea of who was where as you were being introduced to them.
Yes.
And we lose that in the movie. And I feel like I remembered enough from the books, which is amazing because if you know me, I have a very bad memory. But I was like thinking that it would be better if we had known a little bit more about where people sat, not like financially, but like in the class system mm-hmm. at the beginning of the movie. And that could have been cleared up really quickly in Scout's like opening monologue, just saying like, oh, this is the people who live around us. This is them. This is them. This is them. And this is like who and where they kind of sit
yeah.
on the scale. And I think that that would have been a really quick way to like clear that up.
Like you get a bit of it with the Cunninghams, the dad who's dropping off, is it chestnuts? It's chestnuts.
A bag of chestnuts, yeah.
And how he doesn't want to be thanked because it's embarrassing for him that yeah. he can't pay and this is how he's doing it. But without having it go through Scout nearly as much, mm-hmm. you don't get to see her putting the pieces together of, I act like this and I don't fit into what a woman should be.
Right.
They don't have the money, so they don't fit into what the white people should be. Mm-hmm. Their skin is this color, so they don't fit in for those reasons. And you get to see her understanding how the world works yeah. and how people are judged based on things that are outside of their character. And
kind of the town ranking.
Yeah. And yeah. here we have, it's black and white is the biggest yes. thing. And we get a bit of that the Cunninghams are poor, but it doesn't really seem to be of consequence.
Yeah, because that's kind of what I remember from school and learning about the class system that I didn't really know all that much about was, yeah, there's black and white. And then within the white community, there's like the poor whites and like the people who are doing okay. And then there's the rich people.
Well, and then the Yules are like further down and they talk about them. The Cunninghams have maybe less than the Yules, but they don't accept charity and all of that
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah, and so you kind of lose who they are.
I think the biggest thing, though, is that this is Atticus's movie.
Yes.
This is not Scout's movie, no. like the book is. The book is Scout's book. The movie is Atticus's movie.
Yeah, and I found that really interesting that Scout is still, like, narrating it, even though she doesn't play as big a role as she did in the book.
And I wonder to what end, just because that's how it is in the book, because yeah. she narrates at the beginning, the end, and I think only two times in the middle?
Yeah.
I feel like if the narration was cut out, we wouldn't lose much. Mm-mm. Because it doesn't seem like this is through her eyes anymore. I think that after the verdict comes out, I thought Scout goes with Atticus to tell Tom Robinson's wife.
Right.
And here, also, we don't even get to hear what Tom Robinson's wife says. She just collapses because
yeah, we don't get any of her.
Black people speaking much in this movie, it seems like. But Jem's there, not mm-hmm. Scout. And there's a few other situations as well where it used to be Scout because in the book, everything is through her eyes. So if she's not there, she's only hearing about it.
Right.
So to make it work for the movie, they really cut her down and just put other people doing those things. So now it's not even necessarily through the kids' eyes because the first half, it definitely seems like it's Jem and Scout. Mm-hmm. But Scout's, of course, narrating, so she's remembering. But there's all these things where she's not even around for, which is surprising. And then I'm like, why are you narrating it then?
Yeah. Yeah. There's some odd choices in this movie. And I feel like it's not doing the source material, like, justice.
It's just a different movie. And to me, it's not as good. But I guess if you don't want a coming-of-age story, which I think the novel is, mm-hmm. and you want more of a drama or a what do you call a courtroom film?
Procedural?
Yeah, at times, yeah.
Yeah.
If you want that, then I guess you'd like this more. But I enjoyed the coming-of-age story. I think my favorite thing about it was how well that book captures that time in someone's life about not knowing certain things. And then as she becomes wiser and I don't want to say jaded, but more mature. Mm-hmm. And as she grows and learns about how the world actually works, we see that reflected as she's taking things in. You get to watch that happen. And here, I don't know how different Scout is at the end.
Yeah, because there's her speech at the end where she says it's been 2 summers and a fall, and like she's kind of counting off the time, and
right, and
it alludes to the fact that she's changed, but we don't actually get kind of proof of it other than that she's a year older. And in the book, that's like one thing that really stuck with me, was that she was like growing up and she was learning about the world, and she kind of has her eyes opened in a really abrupt way with this, the trial and everything. And she's hearing a lot of like adult things in the courtroom, and she's learning about life. And I feel like we don't get that, because we don't get Scout's reaction really in the courtroom.
Do you think in the lynch mob scene, mm-hmm. where, of course, Scout comes out and she humanizes people by using their names and talking to them, yeah. like, don't you remember me? It's me, Scout. It's me, or Jean Louise, whatever she says yeah. there. And, of course, that is effective, because that's why the KKK wears hoods and stuff, because
so you can't
that's why everyone's
them, yeah.
an asshole online, because you can hide behind stuff,
yeah.
right? You're not a human then. And when she does that, of course, that's one of the most famous scenes. In this version, in the movie, she has this kind of like shifty eye look around. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
A little bit.
So my question is, maybe I'm just misinterpreting the actor's choice, but in the novel, it's very much she's feeling embarrassed because everyone's looking at her, and she uh-huh. has no idea the gravity of the situation at all.
Right.
In the movie, did it look like she was, like, planning?
No.
She was, like, looking around and be like, oh, well, I know how I can get out of this.
No, I took it as, like, child innocence.
Okay.
I took it as her, like, kind of being oblivious to the situation and just, like, doing what, like, good Southern children would do and greet people by name and say, how you doing?
Okay.
Or bring up a past conversation that you've had. Like, I kind of took it as good Southern breeding, I guess, of like, you're supposed to ask an adult how they're doing today, or say hello, like acknowledge them by name.
Yeah, that part. But there's these cutaways where she does like the shifty eye look around.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't sure if that was meant to be, oh, I'm coming up with a plan, or if it was meant to be, I'm embarrassed and looking around. It's a complicated thing to ask a whatever she was, like 9-year-old actor to do.
Yeah, I didn't see it as like plotting or calculating. It was definitely just like innocence and trying to do what's expected of you.
I think maybe I'll stop talking about differences and why I don't like this as much. I think that kind of gets most of it. But overall, I think without having that point of view from Scout, like in the trial scenes, we see that very differently without having Scout and Jim kind of talking through the whole thing. Because
right.
this is Atticus's show
yeah.
there. And that's not the case in the book. So there you get to see, in the book, you get to take it in through the eyes of Scout, who mm-hmm. is an innocent, right? That's
yeah.
how, that's what this book and movie is about. The innocence and perhaps loss thereof. And how a Mockingbird and Tom Robinson and Boo Radley and Scout are all these innocents.
Yeah.
And she takes it in a different way than we jaded adults who are aware of the outside world do.
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting it filtered all through her. And Jem is saying like, well, of course he's going to go free. Like, didn't you just hear all of this?
Yeah.
That's the only logical thing. And Dill as well. And of course, Dill goes back and tells his aunt. And I think it's her that says like, well, of course he's gonna hang for this.
Mm-hmm.
And Dill and the other children are just like, how? We've seen this. And them being free from those prejudices don't see it the same way as all of the adults do.
Right, yeah.
And that's kind of the point of the entire book, right? And we lose that when we don't have it filtered through their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I wish they would have tried to hold on to. But I guess it's hard to, unless you do the whole movie with more narration, which I say, yeah, go for it.
Yeah.
Make Scout the main character again.
Yeah.
But that's me.
Because we don't need all of the questioning and everything. Like, it's not, like, it's the book, at least, isn't the kind of movie or book, I guess. The book isn't the kind of book where we're reading it because we love crime.
Yeah.
We're reading it because it's a coming of age story and it's got a lot of really important messages and it's an important book. The movie felt a little too Law and Order-y for like me, sure, where you're like seeing the lawyers argue their case and they're like working it out. And then there's the big aha moment that his left hand doesn't work. And it's like, that's not what we wanted from the movie. We want Scout to learn about the world and to have, like you said, the narration of her kind of opening her eyes to how things work for real.
But do we? Is that what everyone wants? Because when I talk to people about this movie and this book, they're like, oh yeah, the big courtroom scene. And in the book, it's not big at all. In the movie, it's substantially a larger percentage of it, but still not everything.
Yeah.
So maybe that is what people want. And this movie, that's its success. Mm-hmm. I think something impressive about this movie, and although it's against what I want this movie to be, because I want it to be that coming of age story. Mm-hmm. I want it to be about Scout's journey. I want it to be about her learning about all these different parts of the world and seeing how the same things are systematically happening to lots of different people for the same reasons. But people want a good aha, gotcha.
Right.
And I think this, I don't have a huge background in previous courtroom trial movies. I can't think of many.
Like of this time.
Yeah, there's like, yeah, 12 Angry Men is around here, right? I know that very well, but this may have been the thing that, if not invented, at least cemented a lot of these things to the film going public. One good thing, I guess good to most people, is how modern, and I know you're going to say this movie is not modern, but how modern a lot of the conventions of this movie are, mm-hmm, both in its structure and then when it gets into that trial stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, is this where, you know how so many books, movies, TV shows do like, well, you couldn't have done that if he's left-handed. Look, he caught this apple with his other hand.
Yeah.
That happens so
much. It does.
Is this where it comes from?
Maybe.
I can't think of an earlier one.
That's really interesting because, yeah, that is such a big plot contrivance for like court movies.
Yeah, now anytime in one of those movies someone goes, here, sign something here, I was like, aha, you're left-handed, I know what's gonna happen now.
Yeah,
it's a cliche at this point.
Interesting.
Right. I wonder if it came from here.
I wonder, because yeah, I wouldn't have thought of that, but that is such a common thing now. But yeah, I don't want to say I don't care about Atticus, but I really just wanted more Scout.
Me too. Yeah. But the structure of this, I think, is pretty interesting, and I think it's a bit ahead of its time. It's not of the 60s style of here's what we're going to do, as like a lot of movies were. And I think the influence of this movie can be felt on children's movies for many years. A lot of those 80s kids adventure movies, if you look at them structurally, I think they take a lot from this one.
Oh.
There's a lot more of those plot touchstones that we're comfortable with now, as those develop over the years. But this really sets the skeleton for both a children's adventure movie in the first half and a courtroom procedural in the second half.
Yeah, that's interesting because, yeah, that's, you can see a lot of modern movies in this movie.
It's funny. This is my second movie in a row that's about racism in the South. A big case,
yeah,
and breaking it in a way that seems kind of obvious to movie watchers today, but was pretty revolutionary at the time, and has a long title.
Yes, it does have a long title.
With In the Heat of the Night, just a couple episodes ago.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. We're kind of continuing Black History Month a little bit.
Although I would not, looking at the movie now, would not pick this as my Black History Month pick, because it's not a,
maybe the book.
Yeah, but it's still it's not a book about Black people.
Yeah, you're right.
They're there, and it has great messaging, but I would feel remiss if I picked that.
Mm, yeah.
So what are some things we like about it then? I said a lot of bad stuff. I still like it. It's still good.
Yeah.
The book is just amazing, and this is pretty good.
Yeah. I really liked just Scout. I know yeah. we're like, more Scout. I would love more Scout because you get to see her in a really interesting time in her life where she has to kind of, whether she knows it or not, like she has to kind of decide who she's going to be. And she's young, she's just about to go to school, and she's only really hung out with her brother. And so all of a sudden society's like, well, you got to wear a dress and you got to be neat and tidy and you got to be polite and no fighting and like learn your lessons. And you get to see her kind of figure out where she fits on the scale of children at that age. And I really wish we'd seen more of that. But the stuff that we did see in the movie, I really enjoyed. Like her, the way she was walking in the dress the right. first time she puts it on. I'm just like, yeah, yeah.
I like the way she was walking in the ham most.
Yes. Oh my God, the ham.
That was hilarious. Yeah. Apparently her and the actor who played Jim like did not get along. They're always fighting.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. Can't tell.
Or maybe you can and that works for them because they're
siblings.
Brother and sister.
Yeah.
And she got nominated for Best Supporting Actress
oh.
as a 9-year-old.
Wow.
Or however, I think she was 9. I think she's playing 6 but was 9 or 10.
Actually 9.
Mm. And she lost to, I think, a 15-year-old.
What?
Yeah. It was a wild year.
That's strange.
That was the year, what's her name from Miracle Worker, I think. Someone can fact check this all. That opening sets this movie up as this about nostalgia, right? It's going over childhood things.
Yeah.
And then a drawing of what I assume is a mockingbird, and then it gets torn, and it's really hitting home that, like, this is the end of childhood.
Mm-hmm.
Which I remember you talking about the book being that, and I was like, huh, I never saw the book as that. I thought of it as growing, but I guess it's one and the same in some ways.
Maybe, like, the end of innocence is a way to do it.
Yeah.
To say it, because she is learning about life in a very substantial way. In the book, at least.
Yeah, I think maybe it's just because how it was framed and how when you have a teacher like Atticus guiding her through this,
mm-hmm.
it didn't seem like a catastrophic loss of innocence, but rather a gaining of worldliness. And it seemed more positive.
Yeah.
But here, there's less of that, but you do see that this man is put to death, essentially,
mm-hmm.
because I think one thing I didn't get when I was a child reading this or watching this, when they say, what is it in the movie that he tried to escape?
Yeah, he tried to run while he was being transported back to the jail.
Right. And at the time, I was probably like, oh, yeah, that's what happened. And now I'm like, no, they just murdered him.
Yeah.
Because
I think so.
If they do that to people on the street, of course, they're going to do it to a black man convicted of raping a white woman.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're going to say, oh, no, he tried to run.
Yeah.
He tried to run and we had to fire a warning shot, but the aim was off or like whatever
it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
I do think the movie still does a good job of the kids being kids.
Mm-hmm.
It's not one of those movies where through narration, she's like, that's what the day I learned about racism or like, daddy, why do the black people have to do this? Like, it's not one of those where they're just being used to propel the plot. I felt like they were pretty true to life kids a lot of the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I appreciate that they weren't just saying the plot points.
Yeah.
It's not a great movie when the children are just used as like cue cards for furthering along the plot. I really liked, how real they were.
When we started this podcast, you weren't big on black and white. Mm-hmm. How did you feel about it now and their choice to do it that way?
I didn't mind it in black and white. I've definitely like learned some things about the black and white film time since we started this podcast.
Oh, what have you learned?
Oh, mostly just like makeup and costuming things about how like colors are different in black and white. And I've seen some like really cool videos about how they used to do facial contouring and stuff, because if you're like super pale, you just lose all facial definition. And you're basically just like nostrils with eyes. And how they kind of did up the makeup and what it would have looked like in person versus like on the screen. So I learned a little bit of that like movie magic kind of thing. And I found that really interesting. And just like lighting stuff, which I think we learned about when we did Nosferatu.
Oh, yeah. I love to talk lighting in Nosferatu. Yeah. This had a Nosferatu shot in it with the shadow when Jem was on the doorstep.
Yeah.
Very Nosferatu.
Yeah. But yeah, I feel like I have a little bit more of an appreciation for black and white film now because I've gone to Indies film school for 7 years.
Would you rather have this been in color? Because that was an option at this time.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I feel like it wouldn't gain anything from color. Like Wizard of Oz, yeah, that should have been sure. And it wouldn't have been the same movie if it had been in black and white. But I feel like this being not like a more basic movie, but like a less fantastical movie, I like that it's simple in black and white like
sure.
this.
Sure. Because at the time in 62, movies are coming out in color all
yes.
over the place.
Yeah, yeah.
That wasn't a... And I think this has the budget to do uh-huh. color. But I think they chose it intentionally because it's also a movie about the 30s. So the audiences of the time, and of course us now, we're going to think black and white, this is the past.
That's a good point, yeah.
So you get a lot of that built in. And of course, if your main subject matter is about black and white,
yeah,
might as well go with it.
Yeah.
Seems to fit better. I think you might lose something in color, perhaps.
Yeah, absolutely. I did want to know what color the ham was, though.
Oh, I assume it's kind of reddish.
Yeah, like a brownish red. Yeah, I just wanted to see that ham in color. I'm sure I can find it on the internet. But yeah, no, I don't think it lost out anything from being black and white, I think.
You know what it did add to? There was a bunch of scenes that were just straight up spooky. I loved when this movie got spooky.
Yes. So that's one thing that I wanted to mention was that they did a really good job when it was just the kids of making the world seem how it would seem to children.
Like a walk home at night.
Yeah.
It's scary. And of course, something scary does happen, but it was scary before that.
Yeah. And like the wind and the sounds and like just how good of a job at those points they made it of being a like a child's world. And a child's kind of way of thinking with how, yeah, walk home. We've all walked home in the dark and been a little freaked out. And I feel like that's a very common theme and feeling that people can like relate to. And having your mom call out to you from the back door being like, come home, it's time to come home. And it's just, I liked that part of the movie.
Except they don't know about that. Way to rub it in, Sam.
Oh, sorry.
They don't have a mom. Oh. I did love that scene when they are...
Dill's mom's always calling for him.
That's Dill's aunt.
Right.
Yeah, no moms. No moms around.
No moms allowed. No. Just Calpurnia.
Yeah. Yeah, I do love in the... Oh, again, I was going to say in the book.
In the book.
In the book, Scout hates Calpurnia at the beginning uh-huh. and then grows to realize what she's doing. Because
yeah.
Calpurnia's hard on her. Because she needs someone to be.
For a reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What I was going to say is I love that bit when Scout is asking Jem about their mom. And we don't see them. We just see Atticus listening to it.
Yeah.
That was a good one. He's good at listening.
Yeah. I remember that from the book. We're just going to talk about the book. This is a podcast about the book.
I could go into the book a lot, but we're not.
No.
But you go ahead.
I just remember from the book about just how learning about a character who was like strong and silent, which I think Atticus very much is.
Yeah.
And I feel like they do an okay job of that in here. And like someone whose words are very impactful when they choose to use them.
Yes.
Like we don't hear Atticus say a bunch of stuff for most of the movie until the courtroom scene. And the words he is saying are very impactful and important. And I feel like it was a good lesson to learn back in the day of like, choose your words wisely and like, don't just like waste them or squander them.
Yeah. And I think that is the realization of the children and of us as children reading the book that we want him to play tackle football, to be doing all of those things. And it takes the entirety of the novel for the kids and for us readers or viewers to realize like, that's not it.
No.
These are the things that are valuable. And he's a great example of that. I do feel like the movie does too much into showcasing, like, look at this great man with like the speech and everything. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it doesn't do too much of that. It doesn't do enough of letting it happen just through his actions, like it does in the book. Or maybe it's just that there isn't enough characterization to all of the people giving the respect, so then them just respecting this guy doesn't seem as fulfilling as it does when we know about that community, we know about these individual people.
Yeah. Come on, movie. Be the book. I have an interesting fact.
Oh, yes, please.
So the actress who played Scout in the movie went on to play one of the like adult roles in the U.S. national tour of the stage adaptation in 2022.
In 2022?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because I know she didn't really act much after.
No. So. Yeah, she was like invited to see it, and then she decided to be a part of it, and she played Mrs. Dubose.
Oh, yeah. She's not in the movie.
I don't know who that is.
Mrs. Dubose is... Oh, no, she is. That's the... she has the scene where she's yelling at Scout and Jem close to the beginning.
Oh, she's the one in the rocking chair?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
But in the book, we learn that she's actually a morphine addict, and all of the things she's doing and keeping Jem and Scout extra, that's true bravery. Bravery looks different all the time. Oh, man, that book's so good.
Yeah. I'm waiting for my hold to come up so I can listen to it, because I feel like I need a refresher now after seeing this. But yeah, it's interesting that she kind of came full circle.
Wow.
She's 71 now, so I assume that was 2 years ago. So yeah.
Well, if we're doing fun facts, I do know a little bit of other stuff.
Yeah.
I know they remained friends. Not Atticus. Gregory Peck and Badham.
Yeah.
Whatever her name was. They remained friends for a long time. The actor playing Tom Robinson, whose name you will probably tell me since you have it up there, but he's been in lots of stuff. He's been in, I think, 3 different Star Treks.
Brock Peters.
And he gave the eulogy at Gregory Peck's funeral.
Wow. That's nice. I like when casts stay like friends.
And with a movie like this in particular, it seems that much more important.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you're like, oh, do you know the Avengers hang out all the time? It's like, I don't care. Bunch of rich, pretty people. Yeah.
Of course they do. Who else are they going to hang out with?
As normies? As brokes? No.
Yeah. People who aren't famous? Yeah. So, it's kind of a nice to like hear that they were actually nice to each other. Because you hear so many stories about Hollywood of people just like hating each other and like sabotage.
Well, I do think Jim tried to push her in the wheel into a truck to hurt her.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They really didn't like each other.
Wow.
I had heard that. I don't know. Possibly true. It was a long time ago.
Interesting.
But I guess we didn't talk about some performances. We talked a lot about Gregory Peck. I think very good, but I don't know who he was up against for best actor. And I don't want to say, oh, this didn't deserve it. But really, he had the one speech.
Yeah.
He's very good.
Yeah, he's like a strong silent type.
He's very good. I think he's a very good Atticus Finch.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem Southern, though.
No, not at all.
But I guess he's supposed to be apart from everyone a little bit. He's already a bit of an outcast himself. He's always reading and wearing his suits
classic like book smart people who've gone away from the town and learned about the world and then come back.
Oh, maybe, yeah.
You end up being kind of an outcast even though you're probably the smartest person in town.
Yeah.
And you are a little bit away because you know more of the world. Yeah.
Tom Robinson, I think that was maybe a better speech. That was very well done when he's up on the stand. The woman who played, I think, is it Mayella Yule?
Yeah.
She gave a great performance for the couple of minutes of screen time she had. The dad, Yule, seemed like a real piece of shit, so good for him, because he should be.
Yeah, he was a piece of shit.
The judge had some good little bits where he doesn't talk, but you can tell that he is upset about the verdict as well.
Yes, absolutely.
That was well done. I like the kids. Yeah. The one is based on Truman Capote.
Oh, really?
Dill's based on him.
Oh, funny.
Because they were friends growing up.
Oh. Yeah. But yeah, I liked some of the choices that the actors, like the adult actors, made when they... judgment came down and like the jury announced their decision and everything. You can, like you said, you can see the judge trying not to react because there's like this is going to affect them forever, basically, because if they're seen to be leaning a certain way or whatever, especially as a judge, you are going to have that like color all your future decisions as well. And so I really liked the choices that the adults made as they were reacting to the decision.
Any other standout performances that you can recall? Calpurnia doesn't get much to do.
No, I was really hoping she'd be more upfront in it. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that I have anybody specific, but I just think that the actors did a really good job with what they were given.
Yeah.
Not that it was bad what they were given, but like they did a good job.
All right. Well, I think we might just wrap things up there.
Yeah.
I think a good movie.
Yeah.
Great novel, though. So it's hard when you have that comparison. Mm-hmm. Perhaps if I didn't have that, I would like this more.
And also like an important novel in our young lives.
Sure.
As well. Like that's one of the ones that I actually remember from novel study.
And as someone who's read it as an adult, it's still great.
Good. Okay. Well, I'm excited to read it.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Lots of good stuff in there.
Yeah.
Lots of missed opportunities.
Absolutely.
So next week we are going to give you a classic episode from the vault. It's not a vault because they're all for free anyway.
Yeah, true.
You could just go listen to any of these.
We're bringing it back out so it's easy for you to grab and listen to.
Well, maybe we'll keep some of the themes going for our re-podcast coming out. So I'm going to give you two options.
Okay.
What should come out. So we could do from episode 59.
Oh.
Another one about an important trial, but the preamble? The stuff that happened before the trial leading up to the crime. Fruitvale Station.
Okay.
Another one. Well, it's another one about a black man being killed by police.
Hmm.
Rough one. Good episode. Maybe, was it? Actually, I don't even remember. Good movie. Mm-hmm. I don't remember how the episode was. Probably sad.
Probably.
Or we can go to another movie that maybe is more thematically and tonally in line with Legally Blonde, but still has the important legal matter of air rights at its heart. And we could go all the way back to episode 103 with Burlesque.
I'm going to go air rights.
Oh, those air rights. If there's one thing I've learned from that movie, Burlesque contains no burlesque.
No.
And also, you make sure you secure your air rights when you buy property.
Do we own the air rights above our house?
Oh, man. People could be flying blimps up there. Whatever.
Right?
Or building on top of us, as long as they don't touch us.
I need to check our property agreement.
All right, then we are going to re-release number 103 from, when was that one, Samantha?
May 3rd, 2021.
Oh, interesting. Oh, what a time.
What a time.
What a time it was.
I feel like I judge all of our episodes as like pre-pandemic and post-pandemic.
Or so many of them are.
Mid-pandemic.
Yeah, in the midst of it.
But yeah, oh. Well,
Burlesque, terrible movie.
Terrible.
A great movie.
Yeah, it was fine.
A little bit of both.
Eh.
An enjoyably terrible movie, I thought. But you can hear all about what we both think next week.
Yeah.
Listen to that Burlesque re-release.
Woohoo. Bye, everyone.
Goodbye.